iPhone 10. That's we've got one since the last time we recorded.
Yeah, did we? I can't remember in the last show. Had we had them or had
no?
We
it was literally the day before they came out.
Right. Okay.
So we'd ordered them and we were patiently waiting, and now we've got them and we think they're shit. We don't like the notch. The home button's not there. I miss Touch ID. Why didn't it come with a USB-C charger? It's just what a piece of shit phone.
I know. It's just ridiculous. I mean, yeah.
There's so many dongles for it everywhere.
Yeah. And I have to move my finger to swipe down things, and it's such a strain. I have to use two hands sometimes with my £1,000 phone. It's I might have to hire someone to do the other so I can still use one hand, and they can bring down Control Center whenever
Control
I need.
Control Center goon.
So what do you think?
I love it. I know. Probably the best iPhone I can remember using in a long time. I wasn't particularly excited about it. I kind of I don't get as excited about phones anymore because they've got to a point where it's not adding anything amazing. It's just incremental bits. It's not like when you went from the 3G to the 3GS and now it was twice as fast as it was, and it now had video recording and had a whole load of extra stuff. And when we jumped up to Retina screens, it's a huge leap. Whereas this, I wasn't that excited about it coming out, but now I've got it. It's an incredible phone. Really, really nice. I love the design of it, I think, most of all. People have said it's kind of like the original iPhone with the silver sides. And it is very, very similar. It reminds me of that a lot. But I also like the fact that it is slightly thicker than the iPhone 6, 7, 8. Because it just feels a little bit more comfortable to hold, in my opinion. But no, it's lovely. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like you. I don't get excited about much these days. But it was just that whole anticipation of ordering the damn thing and waiting for the order window, and then and the fact that I'd sort of switched to an 8 Plus temporarily, and it was weird because I was just getting used to the size of the 8 Plus, but it was literally on the cusp of it's still uncomfortable to hold. You know, it's just that fraction too wide that it just feels too big. And I was just getting used to it. It was only when I was going back to looking at a sort of 7, I was thinking, oh my God, this is so small. But it was still uncomfortable to hold and use, but I was sort of coping with it. You know, I probably could have, you know, if that was the phone this year, I'd probably have been happy keeping that for the year. It would have been fine. But yeah, it was nice. As soon as I opened this one, it was just like, oh my God, it's just back to the good size. And the screen is just insane when you turn it down. I mean, just turning it on when the hello thing came up with the white, you know, the sort of white, it's just ridiculous. You know, that moment was just like, oh God, that's just amazing.
I watched some Netflix on it, and watching House of Cards, which was ill-timed, but I started watching that and it was in HDR, and it's just like, oh my God, this screen looks so good.
and the notch thing, you know, we talked about this before, but the whole notch thing, you know, portrait, I don't notice it. Doesn't even register. Just don't. I mean, I would notice it more if it wasn't there. Put it that way. If there was the sort of reverse of the flat tire that the Google smartwatches had along the top. If there was a line across the top, it would look terrible for two reasons. One, we'll come to this notch remover stupidity. But one, because if it was a straight line, then it wouldn't match the bottom curve, so that would just look stupid. And secondly, if it was curved, it would look even stupider because you'd have this weird arch effect, which we'll talk about when we talk about that stupid app, which I really love. So you know, there was not much they could do, basically. You know, rather they could make a square phone and have a straight line across the top, or they could have the chin and the forehead, or they could do what they've done. I think they made the right choice. So in portrait, I don't notice it. In landscape, I don't really notice it. A lot of the time when you're watching things, you know, you might be watching films or whatever that have got like dark backgrounds or whatever, and a few times it sort of threw me because the black is so black that, you know, you just, if you're watching a film like Wonder Woman or something that's got a sort of dark tone to it, you sometimes don't see it at all. But when you do see it, it just doesn't bother me. And we talked about this, but the exact thing happens, which is where I hold the damn thing with my thumb. So, you know, if I'm holding it in one hand, what I'll tend to do is I'll just hold it with the notch. So I'll hold it with my thumb over the notch, and then you don't notice it anyway. So it's just a stupid, it's the thing that people hang on about. Oh, the notch is so stupid. It's so silly looking. Apps look so stupid. One of the first things I did, you know, with all the debate about websites look so rubbish, I just went to my website and it looked fine because the website background was white and the white went to the edges.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It wasn't a big deal. There was no. I didn't see any black bordering. I went to quite a few websites. There was no black bordering. There was no horrible letterboxing. It's like you've got these developers that are, you know, well-known developers out there who are complaining about landscape and they're struggling to get their apps to work. And it's like, you're just an idiot. If you can't get it to work, you shouldn't be doing it, basically. You should stick your apps in portrait or get another job, because this is not this is not the biggest challenge in the world. You know, this is not the biggest challenge in the world. There are safe zones there. There's a structure to it. If you're doing video, you can zoom in. It's just not a big deal. Yeah. And it's just the stupidity that's being hung on. But yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. Love watching landscape stuff, everything.
To pick up on that stuff, I mean, with the notch, I notice it. The only time I ever notice it in portrait is if I'm using my phone in bed, because you turn it on and obviously there's no, like, the only light is coming from my phone. Like, if I'm using it in the dark.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so suddenly you see it and it's like, oh, yeah, it's got a little notch. Oh, yeah. but apart from that, I don't notice it at all. With video, the important thing that most people forget is that the iPhones 6, 6 Plus, 5S, their aspect ratios are all like common 16:9, like pretty much 1080p size screens.
Yeah.
So video fills them completely left to right. On the iPhone 10, it's got a larger aspect ratio. It's more like 16:10 or 16:11, something like that. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head what the metric is, but it is the screen is literally taller when in portrait mode. So when in landscape, it's actually wider than something like a 1080p video. So if you watch any video, pretty much, like if you watch something on Netflix or you're watching something downloaded or whatever, or I mean, some movies on iTunes, I guess they've got the black bars at the top, so you could double tap to fill more of the space. But generally, all of the things that you already watch will look exactly the same as they do on the iPhone 8 already. Like if I watch Netflix, it's got a black bar on the left and right because the aspect ratio is such that it's right in the middle and you don't notice it because your thumb's there, as you say. But then if you're watching something like a movie that's done in like 2110 or whatever the standard is, then you can obviously choose whether you want it to be black box in the middle or whether you want it to be zoomed right out and have that little cutout, which you're, again, not going to see because you're holding it, because the bezels are so small that you're holding it. And with developing for it, I noticed the notch today, actually, because I was adding some functionality to an app where they wanted to be able to zoom into pictures, so just like a standard pinch to zoom mechanic. And I did it, and I'd done all of my constraints to the safe area, not to the super view. So what that basically meant is on the iPad or anything, it looked fine because there was no navigation bar or status bar. So you zoomed and it filled the screen as you expect it to. Fine. And I did it on the iPhone 10, and then there was a black bar at the top and at the bottom because I was in that safe area in the middle. And I was like, oh my God, that looks really weird and horrible. I'm glad they didn't build a phone that looks like this. just changed the constraints to be the super view, not the safe area, and then it filled it, and then you got the little notch cut out at the top, and I was like, that looks perfect. Looks really
exactly.
nice.
Exactly. Yeah. And also some of the issues that I've seen that people have been raising with their apps is when they've been going off piste with, you know, not using UE kit, not using standard components. Yeah. And especially for the stuff that I do, because you know, you do stuff natively with Swift. I do stuff with Titanium, which is obviously using this framework to then build to sort of a native UE. And one of the things that can happen with that framework is that developers can go off piste a lot. You know, if they're not happy with something that they're trying to do, or typically a designer, typically it's driven from design. Yeah. I've written posts about this, but typically a designer will come along and do a design. And instead of the developer, which I always do now, go back and go, you can't do that. You're not having that because that's not how iOS works and that's not how Android works.
Let's not build a custom navigation bar.
Exactly. So they go down that route. They build a custom navigation bar or a custom tab group, because the tabs are at the bottom then in Android. They have to create their stack. They have to manage all the windows. They have to do all that stuff. And the key thing is that they've gone off. They're not using standard UE kit components in iOS, which means now nothing works. So their apps now cover, you know, their custom navigation goes under that home indicator. So, you know, the first thing I notice with, because I keep it really, really simple with the apps and keep the interfaces simple and stick to the sort of standards of the platform, is one of the apps I was doing, which is a sort of Pano 360 viewer thing. I just rebuilt it in the latest because it's using a, what the hell do you call it? Not splash screen. What's it called? Oh my God, I forgot the name.
Launch screen.
Launch screen. You know, the launch.
Yeah.
storyboard. To do the layout. Yeah, that's the word. God. There we go.
Professional developer, Jason Neen. He's available for hire.
Available for hire, yeah. So anyway, this uses a storyboard for the splash screen because with Titanium, you used to be able to use splash images, and then they introduced the storyboard, which made it a lot easier because then you didn't have to have the relevant. So basically what would happen is you built the app, and then it would look cut off. It would look like an iPhone, a normal iPhone, until you added the correct size splash screen, and it would work. With the storyboard approach, it's just scales. It works. So as long as you build it in the latest SDK, it's fine. Yep. So so I just rebuilt it with Xcode 9 SDK, and bang, it fired up in the simulator, worked, and everything worked. Home indicator was in the right place. My nav buttons at the top were in the right place. Everything worked because I stuck to using UEKit, stuck to using navigation window. I was using a navigation window component on Titanium. I don't know if it translates as the same in iOS. And that basically gave me the sort of, you know, top nav buttons, and everything worked and it looked fantastic. So that's one of the biggest things I've seen.
Yeah, the only time I've had a problem migrating an app because of the iPhone X, if you have a navigation bar at the top, then that just automatically works. If you have a tab bar at the bottom, that automatically works. If you don't have a tab bar at the bottom, let's say you've got like a table view or something, then the table view will generally get stuck, like it'll stop just before it gets the home indicator, whereas you want it to go underneath. And mainly that's because your constraint will be to the bottom safe area, or what was previously the view, and now you want it to be to the super view because you want it to go underneath that. So I had a couple of apps, and all I had to do was just change that bottom constraint to be, nope, not to safe area, I want it to be to super view, and then it's fine. And the same with the top, if you've got something that's affixed to the top that was previously clipping to the status bar or even going underneath it, you just need to change your constraint. It's fairly easy. Like people that complain about the landscape mode, well, if you've got, I mean, I don't do many apps that have landscape modes on iPhone anyway. But if you do, just when you turn it round, all you have to do is just inset everything in, which it does automatically if you use the safe area, and then just continue the background color behind, and it'll look fine. Like if you've got, say, a scrollable list, which is on a white background, then you just extend the white background out the side. It's not difficult.
I know, and it's
is difficult if you're not using auto layout. Like if you're not using auto layout, then this is going to screw you over. But to be honest, I was very late adopting auto layout, and once they started doing things like, oh, here's the iPhone 6 Plus, and here's the 6, and here's the thing, and I had all of this like if code of like, if it's this wide, then do this; if it's that tall, do that. That was the point when I was like, I need to switch over to auto layout because this is a nightmare. And it is a painful transition, especially if you've got a big project where you've manually built everything in code because you know best. But funnily enough, you don't now, because now we have multiple screen sizes to deal with, and some of them have peculiarities like this notch. But I can only imagine that there's going to be more stuff that's going to come across that does this. Like there might be other things that have cutouts, or there might be things in future that you want to work around. So like the whole safe area thing in the sort of development language has completely changed. So previously you had like your navigation bar and your status bar, and it was a pain trying to fix anything to those specific things, whereas now they're just automatically bundled together. That's outside the safe area, and it makes it a lot easier. So it's simplified a lot of the development language. And I can only imagine that more stuff is going to have to make use of it. So if you're doing everything manually, it's going to become very, very difficult to keep that up to date.
Yeah, I mean, it's also what's interesting now with especially some app updates that have come out in the last sort of week or so that still are letterboxed. So they've actually done an app update. They've actually done an app feature update and fixed something, and they're still letterboxed, which, given the fact that, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to build apps. Obviously, probably the majority is using the native sort of SDKs and Swift and Objective-C, whatever.
Yeah, I hope so.
And then you've got things like React Native and all these other things that you can do. But given how easy it was for me with the stuff I was doing to sort of make a quick change, whether it was adding a splash screen because something wasn't using Storyboard, or just, you know, rebuilding in the latest SDK, it strikes me that, you know, it's clear that you can sort of pick which apps are either written, like you say, without auto layout or without some of these, you know, clever things that should have been being used, or have obviously got a lot more work that needs doing because there's something going on. They're doing some stuff that's, you know, not standard or whatever, because otherwise it would have been straightforward for them to do this. And it's frustrating. So some of the apps I use Inbox a lot. I use Boxy on the Mac, and I use Inbox on the phone, and that's still letterboxed, which is obviously it's Google, they don't give a shit, but it's frustrating that some simple apps. It's also annoying, just while we're on the subject with iOS 11, that I was at my kid's school today, the nursery. I'm just taking her in, and when I was talking to one of the people there about the app that I used to use with our firstborn Leo to teach him, because he learned so many words in his like first sort of year and a half, and it was because we used this little app called ABC Animals, which is a really simple app. I mean, it's just images of animals with a letter, you know, A for alligator or A for antelope or whatever it is. And you can double tap and sort of draw the letter. It's the most simplest app you could imagine. Hmm. I tried downloading it today. Couldn't download it because it needs updating for iOS 11. It's like, oh, my God.
It's a 32-bit app.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of these old apps that's just sort of sat there. And the interesting thing is, slightly going off piece but almost related, is the amount of inquiries I'm getting from people at the moment that yes. some are native code, but some are Titanium, who have got apps that are several years old that have not been updated. I've got one at the moment that has 10 days they need it done. So obviously value pricing's kicking in. But basically they need the app updated in 10 days. This stuff hasn't even been written in the latest frameworks, the latest MVC frameworks within Titanium, which are all XML layouts and really easy to use. This is all literally layouts with code. So everything is, just positioned by pixel, like you said, and probably absolute positioning and terrible graphics. And that's their screenshots look like iOS 6. It's just horrific. And all these people now... Yeah.
At the moment, that's it's an enterprise app, so it's not on the App Store, and that is the same in that it's never been updated because they never needed to, because they didn't need to go through the App Store, so they didn't need to change anything, and it just doesn't work in iOS 11. So they're telling people, don't upgrade to iOS 11 if you want to keep using our app, which isn't feasible for most of the people that are working on it. And so I've had to, I just rebuilt it from scratch. I was like, I'm not working with the old code because it's like Objective-C, all manual positioning, a load of frameworks that this developer had written himself and then imported in, and just awful, awful code. And so I just rebuilt the entire thing in a few days and just like, there you go, done.
It's good old technical debt. The perfect manifestation of technical debt. You know, all you got to do is, and I know it sounds like a big deal for a lot of people, but all you got to do when a new iOS comes out, when a new SDK comes out, is just rebuild your app. Just rebuild it with the latest SDK and fix any issues as you go. And if you've done that over the several years and improved it and got to the point at one point where you say, okay, we've got to rewrite it at this point when auto layout came out or whatever, then you wouldn't be in this position where developers are fleecing you for, you know, a lot of money to do something in a short space of time.
I've also been caught up by this myself. I had to work on an old app that someone said, oh, can you add a iMessage extension to it? So it was like an emoji keyboard app. I can mention it because it's released. It's fine. It's called Lolly, L-O-L-Y. And it's just like it came out sort of around the time when the whole Kimoji thing had happened. Although, ironically, this one came out first and was better built because it was high resolution images. But it was like an iOS 8 keyboard that you could tap and then you had to paste them into the thing. And now they wanted an iMessage extension. I was like, yeah, sure, easy. That won't take long at all. And I thought, great, I'm going to build that. That'll be a nice bit of easy money to build. And then I opened it up. It's like, oh, shit, I remember this was my first Swift project. Swift 1. Not been updated since. And it's like, now I've got to... First of all, I had to download an old copy of Xcode to migrate it from Swift 1 to Swift 2 because Xcode 9 is I'm not touching Swift 1 code. So I had to get Xcode 8 to migrate it to Swift 2. And then migrate it to Swift 3 and then to Swift 4. And that was a painful day because Swift's automatic copying over works sometimes, but sometimes it gives you some very funky results. That took a lot longer than I was expecting it to. But that's what happens if you don't keep your apps up to date, which is easy for, happens a lot in our business because you build an app, you give it to the client, and then off they go. It's not like you're working on it all the time.
Well, exactly.
It's difficult to follow up with clients and say, hey, maybe I should update it to Swift 2 because they don't give a shit. It's going to be the same. But then when something like that comes along and they want a new feature and it's like, yeah, that's going to be the same again because I need to rebuild it. It's painful.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. As the sort of freelance developer, it's not necessarily our fault, but you know, you can try and go back and sell these people maintenance agreements and all this stuff. But exactly, people go, well, hold on, you're going to update the SDK. How's the app going to change? Well, no, it will look exactly the same to the user. Yeah, we don't need to do that. Okay, you know, it's that classic. It's like the insurance thing. It's a classic situation you end up in. But it's interesting. I'm hoping there's going to be. We had that sort of transition, didn't we, when iOS 7 came out? There was a lot of sort of stuff breaking because of the graphics changes and things and some permission issues. And I'm hoping I'm hoping this is going to be a good cull now of, you know, potentially crappy apps out there. I mean, I'm hoping at some point, you know, if it's not going to support iOS 11 and it hasn't done in the last 6 months or a year, that maybe Apple will be like, you know, we've got to take these things down and just sort of cull this stuff.
So that I think they probably will.
Move forward, which will be a lot nicer. But I think, otherwise, it's cool.
A lot of these old apps as well, they must be using Xcode 8 or the sort of Xcode 9 from before the iPhone 10 came out in order to do the builds. Because if you, let's say you had a project that has a launch nib file, so it does the auto layout stuff. If you don't want it to work for iPhone 10, there's no way of disabling that. I mean, it is just going to work. And if the layout's all messed up and broken, the only way of doing it would be maybe to delete it and use launch images instead, I guess, or to compile it with the old version of Xcode and submit it to the App Store that way, because you can use the old version of Xcode for several months afterwards, like about 6 months, I think, usually. Because I used to do that with a lot of projects. I had a couple of Swift 2 projects, and it's like, well, I don't want to use Xcode 8 and migrate to Swift 3, but I still need to update these apps with minor updates. So for like 6 months after Swift 3 came out, I was still doing it in Swift 2.3 and just submitting it to the App Store, because they didn't want anything that had been added in like the latest iOS SDK. So a lot of them, there is like a finite window coming up, like February, March, you won't be able to do that. So you're going to have to use Xcode 9, which then may or may not cause you massive problems. Same with Swift stuff, you have to update it. And it is a pain, but it's one of the joys of our job.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other pain that can happen as well is when you're actually in the middle of a project. Like I've been working on a project on and off for probably over a year on iPad. For iPads and iPhones, and now of course the functionally the project is complete. We're dealing with some back end stuff at the moment, but it still isn't. I don't think the app's been updated. I haven't updated it to run, you know, it's still running on an SDK because I didn't want to change the SDK, the Titanium SDK, and introduce any issues. So it's still using the same SDK that it was signed off for. But at some point I'm going to have that discussion to say, look, if you want this to work on the iPhone X, I nearly said iPhone 10, if you want this to work on the iPhone 10, then we're going to have to rebuild it in the latest SDK. And that then could mean it's got to be fully retested again, and could introduce other issues. So, but you know, this is stuff that we can't predict in terms of, you know, it's easy for a customer to say, oh, well, you know, they do you know, iOS updates every year. Surely you should anticipate this. Well, it's like, no, you can't, because you can't anticipate the iPhone 10. You can't anticipate that design and the other things that are going to change, especially like from 6 to 7. God, that was a massive change for developers in terms of, you know, everything changed. You had these sudden, all the shitty graphics they were creating for buttons and stuff. It was just horrific.
That was awful.
It is funny. Just talking about that, though, it is so funny now looking at iOS, pre-iOS 7. Remember, you know, iOS 7 came out and everybody hated iOS 7, and Dribbble nearly went down because of the designs with people, you know, I've got a better version and I can do better looking icons and it should have looked like this. And isometric stuff and all this sort of crap. And we're so used to it now that when you actually look at an iOS 6 device or something that hasn't been updated or can't be updated or even a screenshot, it's like, oh my God, that looks horrific. You know, with like lozenge buttons and rounded gradients.
I disagree. I still love iOS 6. I love it. Look at that faux leather stitching in the calendar on the iPad. That was something.
What I did love was the skeuomorphism of the volume buttons, wasn't it? Where if you tilted the phone, it used the accelerometer to change the shine on the little metal volume. When they introduced that, it was like, okay, that's quite cool. I
added that to a few of my apps. I loved it. I really liked the old, I mean, not all of them. I mean, obviously Game Center was horrific with its poker table aesthetic, which made no sense because they didn't allow gambling apps. So it's a very peculiar choice. But I liked a lot of them. I thought a lot of the apps looked quite good. And someone actually tweeted a photo the other day of, they've got an iPhone 10, and I think they just photoshopped in iOS 6, and it just showed like how iOS 6 might have looked on the iPhone 10. And I was looking at the home screen, I was like, that looks really nice. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the skeuomorphism stuff was interesting because there were some things like the little shiny buttons that were quite cute. But then when you got to the leather stitching and stuff like that, it was like...
Yeah, it went too far.
Yeah, exactly. And the poker table was like, okay, this is getting ridiculous now.
Icons were really good back in the day. Like, you used to get a lot more adventurous icons, like third-party developer ones, where they'd look like slightly 3D. They'd be popping out slightly. Or some people, like before you were allowed to choose a background, people would have like a black on the icon. They'd have like a circle with a black outside, so that on the app screen it just looked like a circle, which is pretty clever for a few things, until they added like the glossy shine automatically and stopped that from working. I really like those old style apps. I'd still use them. I don't hate iOS 7. I think it's pretty good, but the design, especially now that they've improved it. Like iOS 10 was where they really tweaked it and improved things. And this is slightly off piste again, but the Maps app now is absolutely perfect, I think. Like, I really liked it when it first launched in iOS 6. But now, in the car, especially on CarPlay, they've refined it so much now that you... little annoying things, like previously, if you were coming up to a roundabout and it was then going to say... And then you maybe had a junction, like maybe 50 yards after that, so it wants to say turn left at the roundabout, but then had like a little bit underneath to say, and then you're going to make a left turn 50 yards afterwards. That would then obscure the bit where it would say like how far till you reach your destination. So usually if I'm sat in traffic at traffic lights or like at a roundabout, I'd look down to see how long the journey is left, and I couldn't see it because it's obscured by, oh, you've got a left turn to make in a minute. I'd be like, oh, so annoying. But now they've shrunk all the fonts down and redone the icons. So now, even if you do have a next stage of the journey, which tends to be a lot more descriptive, you can still see how much time you've got at the bottom. That's always visible. But now you've also got stuff like the current speed limit. If you're on motorways or complex junctions, you get the things telling you which way to go, which stuff like TomTom's had for years, and Google Maps has to an extent. But it's really nice design. Like, if you want to see how... If people look at it and think that the iOS 11 is the same as iOS 7, just look at the Maps app side by side for each version, and that's where all the changes are most prominent, like the change from ultra-thin fonts to slightly thicker ones, and then to really fat fonts, the change from little buttons with small outlines to being really bright, colourful buttons. Really, really good, really nice way of looking at the design change.
I don't have CarPlay, but I did comment the other day on, because I've got one of these little... I'm doing the movement with my hand now, you know, like a mouth. If you do a mouth with your hand, it's sort of that sort of contraption that sits on the dashboard. So it's closed. It's like a rubber thing. It's closed. And then you open it, you put the phone in, and you've got different angles, and it just grips the phone as if you're gripping it with a hand on the dashboard. And it's sort of stuck on the dash, and then I plug it in. And I did comment the other day that the landscape view in Maps now is just really nice in the app. I mean, it reminded me of, especially with the 10, because the screen is so nice. It just looked like an appliance. It looked like a TomTom. It looked like one of those old devices you used to buy that was a dedicated GPS device, you know, travel device. You know, put it on the dashboard and that was it. It just looks really, really nice. I'm using Apple Maps more and more now, actually. I used to use Google Maps a lot because they did the traffic and they did the sort of... And Google Maps was always... I haven't tested this with Apple Maps, but Google Maps was always incredible in terms of the ETA. You know, you could always try and game these things where it would say... Because usually it would be, you're going 200 miles and in your average, your current speed is this. Your arrival time is 9 days, you know. And then it would just do the average thing, and that's how it would work. So you could always game it. You'd drive a little bit faster and then the time would come down. You go, oh, just gained 5 minutes. Oh, no, we've lost 10 minutes. But Google Maps, from the moment you said start, the times that we've arrived at the destination has always been literally within like a minute, unless there's been a massive delay of that exact time that it said we were going to arrive. It's never been, you know, a shock. It's always been correct. It's just amazing because they do all this analysis of the route. They've got all this incredible data. I haven't tested it with Apple Maps recently, but Apple Maps,
I always find
from
Apple
what I've used, it's been pretty good.
I've always had it be exactly the same with Apple Maps. So it'll say get there that time. I think, yeah, I'm going to shave off some time off that, and then there'll be a delay, and then I'll get there exactly at the time. And I'm like, oh, damn you, Apple Maps.
Except for the first version of Apple Maps, where you could have been going to the different location because there were multiple versions of the same location. I remember keying in. I had to go to a meeting at an agency, and I can't remember where it was now, but it was on the way to London somewhere. I think it was sort of northeast London or something, and northwest London. And I remember keying in the location in Apple Maps, and I'd had another incident with Apple Maps where I didn't really trust it. I think it was going to Heathrow, where I tried to go to Terminal 5 and it took me to a different terminal. And so I thought, let me just double check that in Google Maps. And Google Maps came up with a completely different place, which was the correct place. And it was like, you joke? And it literally had the same listing. And it was even the company name. It was listed twice, but it was in two different places. And they didn't have two offices. It was in two different places for the same information that I put in. So I've trusted it a lot more recently, though. I like it. The only thing I don't like, I don't know if you can turn off, is the damn the clicking and stuff on your watch when you're driving. It's great for when you're walking.
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little while back. Yeah, we talked about this a while ago because that annoys me. I mean, I have it turned off all the time because you can't. I mean, it's really annoying because, especially now that iOS 11 knows when you're driving. I mean, I turned all that shit off because I've got CarPlay, so I don't need that. But now that they can tell when you're driving, it should really be able to disable that because I find that massively distracting as well.
Yeah.
Because it would work well in America because in America you always turn left or right. But when you get to a roundabout, it sort of just goes, I don't know. it just sort of taps, as if to say, you should look, but I don't know.
Exactly. And like you say, they're already doing some sort of calculation. I mean, it gets it wrong because it thinks I'm driving on the train sometimes. But, you know, it's doing this calculation or we're trying to work out that you're driving. So if it's gone into driving mode, you would think, well, I'm clearly not walking unless I'm walking really fast. So I don't need you to do the ticking on my watch because you've got me in driving mode. So exactly like you say, as soon as you go into however it calculates driving mode, as soon as that is on.
Make it even more simple than that. Like if your phone screen is on showing the Maps app,
this is powered,
then you don't need to be told on your watch because the whole point of having it on your watch is that you want to know when you're not looking at it. Especially with the iPhone X can tell if you're looking at it. my wife loves it though. She has it on all the time. It drives me mad. But she thinks it's really great. She loves it because she drives along because she doesn't always look at the sat nav. She doesn't have to keep her eyes off the road that much. So she really likes it for notifying her, like, oh, you need to look at the screen now to tell you which way to go. But yeah, I can't stand it. I just have it turned off all the time because I very rarely need directions when fairly rare.
Well, the other thing is it's quite weird trying to explain to people, especially children, that we didn't have all this stuff, you know, when we were their age. You know, it's like we had to get maps out. We had to sort of work out where we were going before we left the house, or print out something from an AA website or something. there was no concept of just being able to get in a car and press a button and or talk to a phone and say, I need to go so-and-so, and then turning your brain off and just following instructions. It was just – and, you know, and I got so bad at it in terms of the following of instructions one time. I think my car sat-nav was in – I think it was in a location – you know, it was in a mode of navigation to somewhere when I turned it off. So I'd got home, I turned it off, and – or I'd gone somewhere, I turned it off. And I then, you know, get in the car, set my phone up, put the sat-nav on the phone, on maps or whatever, to go where I'm going. This was ages ago now, a couple of years ago. Turn the car on and start driving. And what was happening was I was getting two separate voices. But because I was in brain dead mode, because I'm just driving and listening to whatever I'm being told, I was listening to the voices that were coming out. So even though, you know, you could sit there and go, well, that's a bit stupid because the voices were different. You know, you've got Siri and then you've got the voice of the car. It's like I was in brain dead mode. I'd switched my brain off because I didn't need it for driving. I just needed to concentrate on the road. So when a voice said to me, take the next left, I'm like, take the next left, and I'm driving. And then I'm thinking, hold on a minute, I seem to be going away from wherever I'm going. And then I suddenly realize I'm following two sets of instructions. One's trying to tell me where to go. The other one was trying to navigate me back home or somewhere else. So I was literally just driving around in circles. just a complete idiot because I was trusting this thing. But yeah, it's just bizarre. I still remember having a car and having an A to Z in it or one of those big AA maps and having to actually...
I was telling someone about this the other day, I grew up on the Isle of Man, so there weren't really many roads. I think there's five, just called the A1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. pretty much everywhere you need to go. If you get to the sea, you've probably gone the wrong way.
Yes, it's the shortest traffic news ever on the radio.
Well, you say that, you get a lot of cattle roaming around, so there's a lot of warnings. But when I went to university at Exeter, my parents made me take a driving lesson in the UK with someone to take me on the motorway because I'd never been on a motorway, passed my test on the Isle of Man, so I was allowed to drive on the motorway, but I'd never been on one. And so they made me have like a 2-hour lesson with some guy outside of Manchester where I had to drive up and down the motorway a bit to get used to it, which was tedious. And I kept pointing out to them, I was like, kids in the UK, like, when they're not allowed on the motorway as part of their driving test. Like, learners aren't allowed on the motorway, which is really weird when you come to think about it. But I don't need this, but they made me. Anyway, the other thing was, when I went to university, my parents bought me as a gift a roadmap of Britain. Like, it was like a proper, like, a hardback one. It was like 120 pages, hardback, with like a bookmark in it. And I used
on your back shelf.
Yeah, I used to sit down with it, and like before I'd do any journey, I'd open it up and I'd look and go, okay, it's going to be there. Obviously, you've got no idea how long it's going to take to get there. It's just like, well, I don't know, it looks quite a long way. It's estimate 2 hours, might be three, might be four, who knows? Yeah. And then I would get a little bit of notepaper and I'd write down like the major roads that I had to take. So it'd be like, okay, so M5, then M6 at junction 2, and then M69 at junction 4, and then A5. And then I'd sort of have that on my dashboard, so I'd know roughly where I was going. So if I could see road signs, I'd know what route I was going. And so I'd remember what junction to turn off, because you don't want to be sat trying to look at a map on your lap or anything like that.
Yeah.
But that's, you just had to sit down and do like a bit of 5-minute prep before a long journey. Whereas now you just get in and go, take me home. And it just goes, bling.
Yeah,
this
route,
it'll take 2 hours. And it's like, all right.
and the other thing is like that whole thing about trying to work out, especially when I was, you know, in the early 90s and I was doing sort of CAD stuff and I was doing account management and some sales stuff and I was driving a car and I had one of these cell phones in the car that was a clone of my phone because it was all analog, so I could use the same number and everything, and I was driving around to different places, Warwick and Bournemouth and all these different places and Crawley or whatever, and you know, if you were late you didn't really know, well, I've got to sort of guess how long I'm going to be, or you know, try and work out all that stuff. But when you think about now with family, like find friends and stuff. Now, I've got my sort of most of my family in there now. So it's, you know, you can put a ring fence around someone, geofence around someone to find out. So if I'm going to go to my mum's, she can put a geofence around me to I don't need to tell her when I'm leaving, because she can put a geofence around me and it'll notify her when I've left. And then she can see where I am and get from that a gauge of, because you can actually tap on the person and do a driving instruction. It'll say, you know, it's going to take you an hour to drive there. So she can work out, okay, I'm an hour away. It's really, I mean, it's just, it takes. It is amazing to think, you know, I mean, when my kids grow up, there's probably going to be way more electric cars and probably more autonomous type modes in cars and things like that. So
it'll be getting the car and say, take me home, and it will do it.
Exactly.
It'll give you the directions. It'll just take you.
and you know, they'll be playing, my son will be playing Clash of Clans version 95 while he's supposed to be driving me home or something. It's just like, you know, what are you doing? It's like, well, I can't believe you ever used a steering wheel. What is that? You know, it's like, it's going to be a completely, it's just like with iPads. It's like the internet. It's this whole Netflix thing. It's this whole generation growing up that are just used to touch screens and they're used to stuff on demand. And, you know, what do you mean used to buy music? What do you mean used to buy film? What the hell's a videotape? You know, what is that? That's the funniest thing about how, just going off subject slightly, that's the funniest thing about how, culture changes and technology changes, but the way that we refer to things doesn't. So I wonder, like, when my kids grow up and get into, say, let's say they get into filmmaking, or say they get into TV or whatever, and so when people now on television say roll VT, you know, they go, oh, let's go and see that VT, or in a movie like Star Trek, when you watch films like Star Trek, you know, obviously they're predicting the future, but they would say videotape. Or they would say, play the video. And you'll see that in some of the modern films now, even though, you know, the technology of videotapes doesn't exist anymore, they still refer to things as, oh, play the tape type thing. And I guess there's a generational thing there. There's a, you know, we've grown up with the transition. But it's funny thinking when our kids grow up, how they'll refer to things, you know.
Yeah.
Will it be play the stream, you know, or play the video file? And also then when they come to redesign icons for apps and things, what will happen instead of the floppy, you know, because that's our save button. That's been our save button
still
for years.
Still got that.
Yeah, it's...
I suppose on iOS we don't have that. We just have the word save.
Yeah, it's just interesting how the way we refer to things... I guess it's a bit like how we refer to products. So, you know, when the iPhone came out, a lot of people would see a big screen phone and refer to it as an iPhone, even though it's not. And it's a bit like when people say, oh, you know, where's the Hoover? Even though we don't have a Hoover, we have a Dyson. And things like, you know, it's all that sort of stuff. It's just funny how that's going to change. And it comes up now and again when sometimes I'm just driving somewhere with the kids, taking, you know, doing the normal taxi service to a party. And you just sort of sit there sometimes and just think, while they're sitting there tapping away on some device or whatever, you just say, God, you know what? When we did this originally, you know, when I did this as a kid, or my dad used to do this, he'd have to find out where we were going and use a map and all this sort of stuff. They just got no sense.
You were saying about like your mum geofencing you. Like previously, if you were late, like if you said I'm going to be there at 2, and then you didn't get there at 2, they didn't know anything. They didn't know if you'd left, if you were late, if you were dead. Yeah. Well, we'll just wait till he turns up. If he turns up, if he doesn't turn up by tomorrow, he's probably dead. But now, of course, you can just phone. But we didn't even have that. Like,
I know.
Just having a mobile phone changes things dramatically. Well, it's funny as to us thinking about kids now being like, look at them. They've got it easy. They've got sat navs and things. You've got to think back, like, imagine like our grandparents who are like, you think you had it bad? We didn't even have a car. Like, we stayed in a village, and once every year or so, we might leave the village to the biggest town, but it was a 20-mile walk, and we didn't do it often. And then, you know, it's crazy how much things change over relatively short periods of time, like 20 years. Yeah. It's a huge amount of change in the last 20 years, but then that was probably the same for our parents and grandparents as well, but maybe over a slightly longer period, like 30, 40 years, they see a similar amount of change. And it makes you wonder, like, in 5 years' time, will things be as different to us now as they were from 20 years ago to now? Whether that's going to keep accelerating and compressing that speed of change? Because it seems to be that all of these changes are coming faster and faster and faster rather than being stretched out.
Yeah, I mean, it seems... Well, yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, some of the things that there's still disruption and stuff that can change around, but there's still work to do, is I'm just looking at my desk while we're talking and looking around at all the bloody cables everywhere. You know, cables going down the back of desks, cables just spooled around everywhere, cables going into phones or going into wireless chargers or whatever. And you just think, you know, wonder whether the next big disruption that we're going to see that's going to change for us is this whole concept in 10 years of, you know, wireless, proper wireless charging. So that, you know, I've just got a desk here and I'm just putting stuff on the desk. And, you know, yes, it's inductive or whatever technology it's using. But, you know, I could imagine having my desk and I put my laptop down on the desk and my laptop starts charging because it's getting charged through the desk. But the desk still looks like a normal desk. You know, it hasn't got these plates all over it. Maybe first versions could. But, you know, eventually it will just look like a desk. And it's that's going to be interesting. So that you'd almost have a conversation where your kids will be like, you know, you'd be sitting there going, oh, well, I remember when I had to plug my iPad in. It was like, what? What do you mean plug your iPad in? What the hell did you do that for? Was that so you know where to find it or something? No, it's to charge it. Charge it? What? It's just,
Well, it's kind of also, like, I mean, even aside from charging, I mean, it all ties in together. But like one of the few things that I have plugged in at the moment is I've got this microphone is plugged in via a USB cable. My webcam is plugged in via a USB cable. I have a mouse that is a USB one just because it's high DPI one, so it's better than a Bluetooth one for my games console. But all of those things, if there was wireless charging, because I imagine the reason that the microphone is plugged in is because it needs to charge, because it's got a big whatever it's got inside of it that makes it all work. And the same with the webcam. The webcam needs power, and that's what it gets from the USB. Like, it could transmit its data wirelessly. We've already sort of made the leap from like keyboards and mice to being wireless and several other peripherals as well. But once you get wireless power, then you can, like, truly wireless power, like it's just floating through the air. Then you get some really interesting stuff, like the webcam you can just clip on top and it's going to be charged and connected all the time. And then you'll see all cables disappear, because I think I'm right in saying that the majority of cables today are probably for power, even if they're powering something like a webcam that you think of it and you go, of course you've got to plug it in because otherwise it won't work. And it won't work because it's not got power. That's the reason. Like, the actual data transmission could be done wirelessly, theoretically. I mean, it might be a bit laggy and a bit shit what medium you use, but that stuff's always improving. But as you say, wireless power is going to be a huge change for a lot of stuff, because, I mean, even I'm thinking about it about webcams now, because that's what I'm looking at, but you think about like spy films and stuff where they have like the little secret cameras that they stick around.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if you've got wireless power, you can actually do that without having, you know, something that's got 20 AA batteries in it or whatever it might be. So,
well, also it seems like plug sockets and things like that. You know, there's you're going to still have devices potentially that need to plug into what we would refer to now as a plug socket, but that doesn't mean it has to look like a plug socket does now. You know, it can be a almost like a MagSafe type thing. Yes, it could be pulled out maybe too easily or whatever, but there's always ways to work around that. But it just seems a little bit archaic that we have these holes in the wall that you could potentially stick, that you and kids can stick things in and that can, you know, are transmitting pretty powerful, you know, in America, obviously it's 110 or whatever, but over here it can, you know, seriously hurt you or kill you. And it just seems a bit crazy that that's the case. And, you know, the number of times, one of my biggest frustrations, other than losing remote controls, which I'm trying to solve by either taking them away or attaching tiles to them and things. Although my V6 box, my Virgin box, is pretty good now because you hold the button, it just starts beeping wherever the hell it is.
Oh, that's good.
Which is quite nice. Yeah, yeah. But sometimes that's coming from inside one of the chairs, which is not good. Because a couple of the chairs we've got are old and broken, and if you start putting your hands down them, you could get cut to pieces by all kinds of things in there. But anyway, so there's that frustration. But the other thing is cables. Just cables everywhere. Just, you know, the cable management on my desk I need to sort out because I've got these nice Hue lights that go around the back of the desks, the strips, yeah. So it gives you like a nice glow on the wall. And it looks really nice, apart from the fact that it's ruined by shadows and cables everywhere. So my desks are quite old. They're still nice. They're like 10 years old or something, but they're still really in good condition. But what I've been thinking about is getting one of those kits to drill holes to do the sort of do my own sort of cable management going through the desk instead.
I was going to say, that's what I've got at the moment in my office. Yeah. Is when I moved, I mounted my monitor to the wall, and then it's just drywall, so I just cut a hole in the back and then just drop the cables through the wall, and then I have a hole underneath behind the desk so you can't see it, and then the cables come out. And it looks great because it's just floating in the middle of the space, but it similarly has like Philips Hue strip all around the outside of it, so it lights up, but it's just sort of floating there. You can't see any cables at all, which is nice. But then you look behind the back of the Mac Pro, if you look under the desk, and there's just cables everywhere because I've
bothered
to tidy them up.
That's fine. I don't mind all that stuff. That's the good hidden. That's how you do the good hidden cable management. But yeah, I mean, I walk into the sitting room and I just find a USB cable on the floor. You know, just sitting in the middle of the floor because one of the babies has just pulled it out the wall and probably tried to strangle themselves with it. And the number of times I have to replace it, and that's the biggest frustration. So if I guess, I mean, it's going to be different now because obviously we're in that transition phase with the charging system where the 10s are, you know, air quotes wireless, and the 8 is wireless, but all the iPads are still not. And so it's not going to change overnight, but I'm hoping there will be that point where we can have pads, the plates, a little table, you know, like IKEA are doing those tables that you can embed, a desk that you can embed the wireless charging in. So I could imagine having almost like a coffee table or a little side table where its entire surface could be, you know, a pad, but it's covered or laminated in such a way that you don't see it. And so you literally just pop your phone on it and it starts charging. That would be amazing. Or, you know, I know you don't have Alexa or whatever, but having I shouldn't have said that. having a lady in a tube or whatever that you can just drop on a desk and it's just going to start charging. That's the big breakthrough that we need. But it's whether people can, obviously we've got the Qi or Qi or whatever it's called, Qi charging standard, which hopefully is going to be the one. But if they can embrace that, that would be really cool.
So this is a lovely little segue because I saw an article when I was just flicking through Apple News the other day, and I saw the title and I literally almost spat out my tea and just said, what the fuck are you talking about? So the title of this particular piece is called "The iPhone X's Charging Situation is Complicated." What? What? Okay. Tell me, Inverse.com, why it's complicated.
Advertising revenue was low that day.
I looked into it. And so it's basically, this is amazing. There's so many great quotes here. So I'm going to read a few of these verbatim, but blah, 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 blah. Has a plethora of new ways to charge your phone. That's good and bad news for those who want to put their old charging hardware to good use. The short answer is yes. If it worked with your old smartphone, it's probably going to work with the iPhone X. It's like, what the of course it's going to work. It's just plug it in. It's a thing. And it's like, oh, it's got a 5-watt power adapter, but you can use an iPad one for a slightly faster thing. And then it goes on about the 30-pin dock connector. That's like a paragraph about that from 2012. And it's like, oh, you might need to get an adapter, like a $29 adapter, if you want to use one of your 30-pin charging cables with your iPhone X. It's like, someone isn't upgrading from the iPhone 4S to the iPhone X, funnily enough. Yeah. And then it doesn't even mention wireless charging. It doesn't mention the actual headline thing they added. It just goes on about USB-C for faster charging and all of that nonsense. It's like, there's nothing complicated about the iPhone X charging, or the iPhone 8 for that matter. They just plug in via Lightning. And if you have slightly better adapters, then it charges slightly faster. Like if you use the USB-C one, which is the fastest, which is more useful for the iPad Pro. Because that's obviously got a massive battery and takes a while to charge. And if you've got the USB-C power brick and use a USB-C to lightning adapter, you can charge it much, much quicker than the bundled 12-watt adapter. But it's not needed for the iPhone. I mean, the iPhone just charges fine with a 5-watt charger.
Yeah, I mean,
if you really
want to
use 10-watt, you can, or 12-watt, whatever.
Exactly. I mean, I would be... I'd be shocked and surprised if we see any type of wireless charging at the moment for the iPad, purely because it's so damn big, like you say, and it needs, you know, a lot of juice. It would take, I think, trickle charging through wireless could be quite difficult. But what I've noticed with the 10 and with the 8, just having, I've got like a, what is that? It's a little anchor pad that just sort of sits on my desk. Hmm. You know, the natural thing for me to do at the moment is when I get to my desk is I just stick it on the pad. I don't even think about it. And for the first time now, I guess it's that thing about, oh, you know, I've noticed my battery life is really good. Well, your battery life's really good because I'm constantly making sure my phone's topped up because I'm putting it on the charger. And you don't notice it at night because you go to bed and just stick it down. You don't touch it and you wake up in the morning. So I haven't had to plug it in. The only time I've had to plug it in is when it's been really low, which, to be honest, hasn't been that often because of the way I'm using it now. Mm-hmm. But if it has been really low and I need to go and walk the dog or something, and even though I might have 20% and 20% is more than enough to last walking the dog, I might shove it in for 15 minutes or 10 minutes or something just to give it a boost on the lightning. But it's very rare, very, very rare. So I can see it becoming... really, and if I do this thing where I'm going to buy one of these little kits and drill some holes in some different bits of furniture, won't tell Hannah yet. what the hell's that? No, don't worry about it. Then,
don't touch it. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, it's going to be even easier because it won't even be a pad that I have to, you know, aim for and stick the thing on. It will just be, I just pop it on that little flush bit on the, you know, the top of the table and it just starts charging. That's going to be interesting. You know, that's going to be really cool.
Yesterday, or was it the day before, I used my iPhone as usual in the day, and I don't plug it in so much anymore because at the moment I'm working on an iPad app, so my one USB cable on the desk is constantly plugged into an iPad, so my phone is draining naturally through the day. I'm just using it normally, and then I fell asleep in bed reading an article, and so didn't charge it overnight, and then I used it all the next day, and then it got to the late evening, I looked and I had like 40% battery. I was like, hang on a minute, I've not charged this for a day. That's quite impressive. Wow. So it seems like the battery life is nice in the iPhone.
Yeah, it is definitely better, yeah.
Bigger battery. Did you see the... what's the guys that rip the phones apart every time? iFixit.
Yeah.
Did you see their breakdown of the iPhone and how it's got two batteries in it?
Two?
It's got like, yeah, it's got an L-shaped... so the logic board is much smaller and they've like folded it over itself. It's incredible engineering how they've done... like the logic board is like 30% smaller. No, 70% smaller, and it's like sandwiched. But the battery, there's actually two of them, so it makes like an L shape. There's like a big long one and then a small little fat one, and they go next to each other, so it's got more space in there, which is, it's pretty cool. But did you see that iOS 11.2 is going to improve the wireless charging speed, bump it up to 7.5 watts if you've got one of those fast charging capable adapters, which I think all of mine are at the moment.
Yeah, I think the ones I bought are, let me just check this. This
and they can go up to 10 watts for some Samsung phones, but then that's probably why they kept exploding. So,
well, exactly. this is the thing as well. I mean, there was a comment, I'm not sure if we talked about this before, there was a comment last I can't remember what the podcast I was listening to, but I think it was Gruber, where they were talking about, you know, why don't they put a higher powered USB charger in the box with the iPhone 10, the iPhone 10. And it was about when he was speaking to someone, and essentially it was like a sort of on the record, off the record conversation. But what came out of it was Apple put the relevant charger, the best charger in the box to maintain the battery life of your product. So in theory, yes, they could put a higher power charger. Well, they definitely could because they've got them. They could put a higher power charger, USB charger, USB to lightning charger in the box with the iPhone 10. But the power that's putting into that phone might not be good for your battery longer term. And so they put the correct – they put the – you can use whatever you want, but they give you the appropriate charger for the best life of that phone, you know, in the box, which is
fine. Because most people just charge overnight, don't you? I mean, that's
exactly
what we've got used to.
Yeah, and the whole thing about cables and all this crap, and people, oh, it's a USB cable in the box. We've talked about this before as well. You know, it's not a big. I mean, I end up buying quite a few lightning cables, and I've sort of settled on this one that I've managed to get from Amazon. That's one of these reinforced ones. That's really nice. It's long. It's strong. It's got good solid connectors on each end. It's got one of those USB connectors that doesn't have all the plastic gubbins around it. It's literally just yeah, it is literally the size of the thing that goes in, so nothing can come off it basically. And I've only had one issue with one of them, and that was literally because one of the kids just snapped it. The lightning bit just literally snapped, and you know they broke it. They actually physically tried to break it. One of the babies. But otherwise, I've had no trouble with them, and they've been fine. Whereas the white ones, I'm always finding with, you know, the ends frayed or the bits broken where it hits the sort of connector and stuff like that. And the fact is, you can go online and buy these things for about £7, and they're perfectly fine, and they work perfectly well, and they charge perfectly well, and it's not the end. You know, you don't have to, all these articles about, oh my God, you're gonna have to go and buy £50 or £30 cables. No, you don't. Yes, you can buy really shitty ones and probably ones that aren't made very well, but there are plenty on Amazon and stuff that are really, really good replacements. One thing I was going to ask about your 10 is, are you screen protecting, casing it, or are you bareback? What are you doing?
I'm completely bare at the moment, which is how I generally prefer my phones. And I've not done it for a while because I think I mentioned this before, but the when they did the aluminium ones, the 6, the 7, I found them to be too slippy, especially if I'm using the Plus models, which I did for the 6 and 7. They were just too big and slippy. They just kept falling out my hands and stuff. So I'd buy the leather cases to go with them. But for this one and for the 8 that I had for the month previously, I've not bothered. I've not had a need. I find that it fits perfectly, and I don't really want to cover it up because I really like the silvery sheen all the around the side of it, because I went for the silver model.
Yeah.
Just really like the look of it. So I don't really want to cover it up. I'm not going to bother with the case, because if it gets scratched a little bit, it doesn't matter. And to be honest, as it's all glass, I mean, it'd have to have a pretty impressive case on it. Like, if I'm going to drop it and it's going to smash, I don't think a case is going to make a difference. I guess it might in certain corners, like if you had a thick case, but like something like a little screen protector ain't going to do diddly squat to a concrete floor. So I don't see the point of just ruining the phone generally. My father-in-law, he always has like a little plasticky thing over his phone. Like, it kind of feels like he's forgotten to take off the wrapping, like when you get the phone. And I always see it and I always want to peel it off every time. And I actually started the other day and I was like, oh shit, let's put it back on. I hate them. I don't like them. Have you got a case or are you just leaving it?
I have at the moment, but let me just mention something quickly. I mean, my wife is a massive fan of leaving all those protective things on. So I remember when I met her, she had a StarTAC phone, the sort of captain, it was referred to as the Captain Kirk one, the flip phone.
Yeah.
And it had that little tiny protector over the screen, and it had that little tab that you can pull. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, you've left that on. And I went for it. She went, don't you dare. I was like, okay. And loads of people, you know, when everyone ever saw her phone, and she told me a story about a guy that she knew at university, Arno, French guy, who, just looked at her phone or something that she had one day and went, oh, you've left that on, just peeled it off. And she was like, just like removed it. And that was the end of it. But she just leaves that. She still leaves that stuff on all the time. And it's the only reason she can't do it. She's never been able to do it with the phones with the home buttons is because the plastic thing covers the home button, or I swear she would have left it on. But anyway, with the iPhone 7 and with the 8, I had a case on the back. With the 7 and the 8, though, I didn't do the screen protector. So I used to do a little plastic screen protector, and with the 4s and the 5s, where the edges weren't curved, they would go up to the edge and, you know, it would be a nice fit and you wouldn't really notice it. And it was always the main reason I did it is I never trusted the glass scratching. I would always look after the phone. I would never put it in my pocket with keys. I'd never put it face down on something hard or whatever. I was always very, very careful. But I would always pretty much use a screen protector. With the 7, I think, was the first one I didn't. And with the 8, I didn't. And the 8, I didn't because of the promise that the glass was so strong. And what was really frustrating with the 8, the 8 Plus, was that literally 2 weeks after I had it, there were loads of little micro abrasions, micro scratches on the screen, which was really frustrating because I cannot explain to you how that could have possibly happened, because I would never put it in, you know, never put things on it, never put it in my pocket with anything. You know, the only thing that's in my pocket is fluff and lint and whatever that is in your pocket. You know, that's it. And you could be, the argument could be that there's other bits in there, that little particles, whatever. But it just was really frustrating considering this is supposed to be really strong glass. So with the 7, what I did is when I got the 8 Plus, I sent the 7 in for an AppleCare replacement and paid the £50 or whatever it is. And they give me a new phone. So I've now got a brand new phone that I can resell. And it was worth the £50 excess or whatever to be able to now resell that as a new phone. With the 8 Plus, I'll probably do the same, but I probably will do it instead of a voluntary Apple Care. I'm just going to complain and say, look, my screen's scratched and it shouldn't be, because this glass is supposed to be strong, and I'll take whatever decision is made and deal with that. So what I've done with the 10, with her phone, I've definitely got her a case because she has dropped them before. So I've got her case, and I've put, what I've got is these for both of us actually, is I've gone for these hardened glass ones. Mm-hmm. The cover, and it's a fairly cheap one, but it works pretty well. It's got the notch, and the notch is black. It's got cutouts, which I don't think it needs. I think you could cover the notch with glass and it would be fine. I would have thought so. And if one does come out that is properly clear and covers the notch, I'll just get that, because it works great, because it covers the entire front of the phone and it curves, so you don't really notice that anything's there. The only giveaway that something is there is because it's got the holes cut for the speaker and things. You can obviously see that at the top of the phone, which is probably the only thing that I might decide I'm going to take off at one point if I'm confident enough that it's going to be okay. Because I do like the fact that you don't, you know, the notch is just flat and there's nothing really to see other than the notch itself. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I can, if you look at my phone, I'm holding it now, you can physically see these holes at the top of the screen, which, you know, don't look great. But it's serving a purpose, and it's and the nice thing is, because there's no home button, you don't get that raised. If you put these glass things on the normal home button phones, you do notice it, because they are thicker than a normal screen protector, and you'll notice the fact that the home button is in quite a dip. But because there's no home button, you don't notice it. So with that on the front and a case on the back, I don't mind it. I mean, it might get to a point halfway through the year where I think, bollocks, I'll take it off and, you know, try it out, because I would like to have it, you know, completely caseless and protectorless, because it just looks so damn nice. But I have actually dropped it once. It fell out of my pocket onto the carpet. I'd put it in a jacket and it just sort of slipped out. And so it's little situations like that I think, and the only thing is if it's insured and all this stuff is fine, but with the supply constraints hopefully getting better now, I would rather not break it now where it finds out I have to wait, you know, another month or something to get another one. So yeah. I guess, you know, early next year I might decide, you know, screw it, I'll take the case off and I'll take the front off, take the glass off and I'll go. But it's just a bit disappointing actually. I mean, and looking at the actual, I'll check it out later actually, but the glass, this hardened glass on the front looks perfect. It doesn't look scratched at all. So, you know, the thing that the concerns me is the fact that it's supposed to be the same glass as the 8, and the 8's scratched. And so that's the only reason I haven't done it, but...
Hmm.
It still looks nice.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I still think that my favourite case was the iPhone 4 with its bumpers. I absolutely loved the bumpers. Like, I bought one before they gave them away for free to everyone. But I had a white iPhone 4, and then I had a black case, black bumper around it. And I absolutely loved it, because it was great, because it didn't add any bulk. It made it a bit smoother to hold, so it wasn't as slippy. But it wasn't bulky, didn't really add much weight to it or anything. But then if you dropped it, as long as you dropped it on a flat surface, which I don't generally walk over hills or anything, or rocks, so it's always going to fall generally on something flat, it would never break the screen, because you'd always hit an edge first. And by its very nature, it's a bumper, so it's kind of like a bumper boat. It just bounces around. I absolutely loved that. And if they did an Apple... like an official Apple bumper for the iPhone 10, I would buy that. I might not use it all the time, but I think I would wear it quite often, because I really like the bumpers, but they don't, and I don't really want to get a third-party one. So,
yeah, the bumpers were nice. This is interesting, though, because you clearly probably didn't have the issue I had. The only issue I had with the 5 and the 4, or 4S, 4, 4S, and 5 and 5S, because I think, did the 5 come with a bumper? Did they do a bumper for that? I can't remember.
No,
I definitely had it
with
the 4.
They did the 4 and 4S.
I definitely had it with the 4. So the 4 had stainless steel. Yeah. Stainless steel around, and it was that brushed stainless steel effect, right? And stainless steel strong, and stainless steel shouldn't be damaged by anything other than probably metal or rock or something. Yeah. But I had a weird situation where I'd got this thing pretty much brand new. I think I'd bought the bumper brand new. You know, I'd ordered both at the same time. They both came on the same day, unlike these days where your iPhone 10 case comes 3 weeks before the iPhone 10, which is real, or the pencil comes before the iPad Pro, which is even more annoying. So I'd got them both on the same day. I literally took the phone out, you know, obviously in its wrapper, I put it straight into the bumper, and that was it. And when I took it off at some point, probably to just give the screen a clean or something, I noticed these little like tarnishes on the stainless steel. They were like little dark marks, not scratches, but just
that suggests moisture.
Yeah, not rust, but just like these, like as if you'd taken like an HB pencil and sort of just scribbled a little sort of mark, you know, just like something was abrasive or something in there. It was the most weirdest thing. And there was actually a thread in the Apple forums and stuff, in some forum somewhere, I remember, where I'd posted this and other people had posted this. And the funniest thing was that, you know, because we were, you know, incredulous to it, because it was like, well, how could a bit of dust or something affect stainless steel or whatever like this? But it was just funny seeing people going, oh, you bloody idiot. You know, it's stainless steel. Nothing's going to damage that. That'd be ridiculous. And then all these people were posting photos, including me, of what this damage looked like. And it was just the weirdest thing. And I don't know what caused it. I ended up at one point doing that classic thing that you do if you're an idiot, where you go, okay, I think I'm just going to try and rebuff the stainless steel. So I got a Brillo pad or something and just sort of I got rid of the marks. And I ended up with a sort of interesting brushed steel pattern that didn't exactly like the original and didn't work very well over the buttons. But, yeah, it got rid of the marks. But, yeah, the bumper was great. And I dropped it in the bumper. I remember getting in the car and dropping it in the bumper, and there was no problem at all. I mean, the bumper just got a little bit scuffed, and that was it. So, yeah, I would definitely go for one of those. Liked it.
Yeah, I did like those. So what do you think about Face ID? How's that working out for you?
It has been up until last night when I was sitting downstairs. It was fine, absolutely no problems with it. Went through the normal stuff that you suddenly realize what's going on when you put a pair of headphones on and it doesn't recognize you, so keyed in the pin, did it again straight away and it worked fine. Had a hat on and it worked fine. Had a hood on and it worked fine. Last night I had a weird. Last night I had to retrain it, which was the only weird thing. I've sat in the same chair. It's like my little chair in the corner of the room, with the sort of lights dimmed, sort of TV mode, and you have the sort of little lights on. And I've used it in darkness. It's not been a problem, and it's always worked fine in that chair. And for some reason, last night it just wasn't recognizing me. Literally, just kept just vibrating and not recognizing me. So I had to retrain it, and then it was fine. And it's been fine since. So that was the only blip. But otherwise, I would say, and there are people on podcasts and stuff talking about the differences with Touch ID. For me, it's faster than Touch ID. Because there's some people that have gone on about the fact that, you could take your iPhone out of your pocket and authenticate with Touch ID quicker. And it's like, well, if you just think about, the way I'm going to try and do this now. But, when it's in my pocket, I don't take it out of my pocket. I wouldn't take my phone out of my pocket by pinching it on the button. No. That to me doesn't seem like a natural thing you do. It seems very precarious and you're likely to drop it or knock it. So I'm going to take it out of my pocket with my one hand, around it as you would. If you've just imagined you've done that mode where you've got your thumb on one side and your fingers on the other, you're then going to reposition your thumb or use your other finger from your other hand over the Touch ID button, which is then a movement you have to do, which takes however many milliseconds or half a second or whatever. Then it's going to auth you and then you're through. I don't have that now, so I take it out and look at it and I'm authed. So to me, it's completely quicker. And like the notifications on the home screen, you don't have to swipe and auth, you just tap and you're in.
Apart from that blip
and when it hasn't recognized me because I've got my hand in front of my face or I've put on headphones or something. That's been it's been perfect, basically. And even in those situations, and you can test it yourself, when you put a pair of headphones on or something and it doesn't recognize you, you type your PIN, you can turn the phone off, do it again, straight away it will recognize you. And that has been the crux of all these stupid bloody articles going on about how people have hacked Face ID. They haven't hacked Face ID. They haven't hacked Face ID. They have retrained Face ID. First of all, just to jump into this subject quickly. First of all, Apple said on stage that twins are going to fool it, guaranteed. If you've got an evil twin, the Spock picture came up, make sure you use a PIN code. So that was already a given. Secondly, from what I've understood and read, and I'm not sure what you've read about it, is that when you look at Face ID, it tries to auth you. If it doesn't auth you because you look different, you type in your PIN code. Now, at that point, it takes another picture. So it takes another picture of you because you've put the PIN code in, and it uses that picture to then add to the algorithm or whatever, so it retrains. So if you have a sibling who looks similar to you, and also there's supposed to be a threshold in there as well. So if I basically – so like if Leo knows my PIN code and he picks up my phone and it doesn't auth because it doesn't recognize him, then when he does the PIN code, that's just going to let him in and it's not going to do anything because that's just the way it works. if he's shown it to me, let's say, and it didn't recognize me or something, and then it's asked for the PIN code, if he types in the PIN code, it's going to take another picture of him or another process, whatever it does. And if the threshold between that sort of picture, that face, and my face is so extreme, is so different, it will ignore it. It will just let him in with the PIN code.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's
similar,
right.
But if it's similar, if there's a variation that's within a tolerance, it will use it as a retrain face, which means...
with a brother or something.
Exactly. So with a sibling who looks similar, if they look similar and know your PIN code and do it immediately after and the threshold is within the range, it will be a retrain, which is exactly what's been happening. So all these idiots that are going, oh, I've, you know, got into my brother's phone or got into my sister's phone or got into my mum's phone or whatever.
After you're putting just, in their PIN code 20 times.
Yeah, you're just retraining the damn thing to recognise your face.
But also the people that have done like this prosthetic mask that got into it, who've used very little detail. Like, well, A, they're to use an exact recast of someone's face, which is pretty tricky to do.
I love all that.
B, it's not clear whether or not they had the awareness thing on because it doesn't have eyes, so
yes,
it shouldn't have worked with the awareness thing. So you have to turn that security feature off, which is fair enough because, you know, some people with disabilities turn it off. But more likely, it probably didn't work perfectly first time. They probably had to enter the PIN code to, like, they probably tried it a couple of times, it didn't work, and then they entered the PIN code and redid it, because otherwise Face ID locks itself and you have to enter your PIN code. So then they probably inadvertently trained it to then use that face. And it's like, there comes a point, like, obviously, like, I think at some point people managed to get into Touch ID, like taking a fingerprint off someone and recreating it, like, in a very meticulous way, and you can get into it. But it's the same thing where there was a brilliant XKCD cartoon, which isn't specifically about this, but is about passwords in general. And it's like, what developers think. And it's like, haha, we'll use a 512-bit SHA. No one will be able to break into that. Our secrets will be safe from the government. And then what actually happens? And then it's just got a picture of an agent going, hit him over the head with this $5 hammer until he tells us the password. And it's like, doesn't matter if you need like a £50,000 supercomputer to break your password if you can get into it with a £5 hammer. And this is the same thing. It's like, yes, someone could probably drug you, take a perfect mold of your face, calibrate it a few times and do it. But similarly, they could probably also just put you under surveillance and watch you enter your PIN number when it doesn't come up correctly. If anything, Face ID is much more secure because you're having to enter your number much less, obviously, like I've said this many times about Touch ID. If I was trying to break into someone's phone who had an iPhone 5S or 6 or whatever, for example, with Touch ID, I would make them get their hands wet somehow, and then I would like be filming them so that they were trying to enter it with a wet finger so that it didn't work, and then they had to type their code in. And it's like, that's much easier to survey than trying to get their fingerprint and do it that way, or do any of the other crazy things that people try and do. Like, criminals don't work that way. There are much easier ways to get into things. And also, it's like a barrier of entry. Like, why try and break into someone's phone if they've got Face ID when you just go after some shitty Android phone?
I know. I just love that whole thing of, you know, Face ID's been hacked, you might want to reconsider using it. And it's like, yeah, you might want to reconsider using it if you wake up in the middle of the night and someone's is like, ILM. ILM are there putting a face mask on you. You know, imagine waking up and they're putting plaster cast on your face. Like, what the hell are you doing? You know, this is the degree of stuff they'd have to go to. And then 3D printing your face and doing all your damn... I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing.
Using a six-digit passcode ain't much more secure.
Yeah, but like you said about security, it's always the funniest thing when people talk about security and passwords and everything else is, you know, I still remember the story about the guy, this company who managed to just get in through the digital keypads that companies have, you know, on their doors. So we're going to install these digital keypads. Everyone's got, or key cards, whatever, you know, you tap your card on. Everyone's got these things. So all this guy did was have a card, just a generic white card, because they'd worked out what cards they've got. So a generic white card hung around his neck. And all he did was work out when the fag breaks were. And then he just rocked up just before the fag break started and smoked a cigarette outside. You know, he's in a white shirt. He's in dark trousers. He's in smart shoes. He's having a fag. He's got his phone. He's outside. The other people come out and have a fag. And as they go in, he just literally just, you know, rocks in after one of them without swiping. Yeah. And it's just, you're in the system. You've got in, you've broken through. So it doesn't matter what security you have. So, all of these, it's, you know, at the end of the day, we know what this is like. It's clickbait. It's all this bullshit that you get with the technical press. They want you to click on this stuff. They want you to fall for it. But it's the number of articles that are like, you know, Face ID has been hacked again. It's like, oh my God. It's not been hacked. No one has broken into the secure enclave and all that stuff in the device. No one has done that. They are just retraining the damn, you know, they are retraining the system to use a different face. It's just, it's very
fascinating. My experience with it has been great. Like, it's worked pretty much every time for me. Occasionally I have to enter a PIN number if I've done something stupid, like I've got my arm in front of my face. Generally always, or if I've put it flat on the table and I'm not, if I don't lean over much, then that's got better and better the more I've done it, because I've retrained it each time, and so now it probably recognises like my forehead and eyes, and it can do it just based on that rather than having to see my chin as well as it did the first few times. So it definitely gets better and better each time, but it started off from a pretty strong place anyway.
Yeah.
And even like the other day, I was brushing my teeth and I picked it up, got into it, and then afterwards I was like, holy shit, I just got into my phone. Had like a toothbrush in front of me.
Exactly.
It's very clever.
Apart from this little blip, which was just a blip, but apart from that, it's been way more accurate than Touch ID ever was for me. I would always get situations with Touch ID, especially when I'm walking the dog in the morning. It's either wet, sweaty, whatever, or I've just got out of the shower or something and I pick my phone up. I'd always get that issue where it's just not recognizing you. You'd have to swipe the, you know, wipe the sensor off. And it was, so I just don't get that at all. I was surprised how fast it was.
I think it's slower in some places, so not for getting into the phone, especially now that it's nice to pick it up and the lock screen's actually useful now because I can look at it and then it unlocks and I can tap, and you know. Whereas previously I had to move my thumb around and it was much slower. But it is slower for things like 1Password, because you go to the app and then it takes it a little while for it to activate and then does a little shitty animation. It's like, I don't need the animation, just let me into the app. But that seems to be like a Touch ID thing. That's right, a Face ID thing, not a 1Password thing. It's like a UI from Apple. So I do find it slower getting into apps like my banking apps or 1Password, but it is much more convenient. So, and we're talking like fractions of a second. I mean, it does add up if I use 1Password a lot during a day. It's annoying that opening it each time is maybe like 0.3 seconds slower. In the same way that when they like sped up animations for opening apps, it's like, wow, the phone suddenly feels a lot faster. If they got rid of that animation or they sped it up a bit, it would feel a lot better. But at the moment, it does, to me, feel slower getting into apps than putting my fingerprint. But it's way more accurate. So I'm probably saving time, even though individual times it feels slower. But as an average overall, it's probably faster because I had so many times where it... I found it to be really good.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing on the payment stuff as well is that they've introduced this now double tap on the side, which is obviously
like
different.
That.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's more consistent with how the watch works. And I was thinking about this and wondering, well, why can't you just have a button on the screen that you tap? But then I was thinking, well, maybe that's something that a developer could get round and trigger so that somehow, you know, it's the app triggers it and then you're looking at it and now you've just paid 25 quid or something to some dodgy developer. So maybe the fact that you're double clicking that button is something that can't be invoked by a developer. It can only go through the OS, and then therefore that's how it works. It's annoying because you sort of, there's a shift of your hands, isn't there? You've sort of got to reposition your hands slightly.
I find it really awkward doing double clicks as well. Like, I hate it on the watch because every time I do the double click, I'm not sure. Like, sometimes I accidentally just do one click rather than two. I'm not quick enough, or I miss tap. And then it goes into like the dock and it's like, oh no, then I have to click again to go out of the dock and then double click. That was much more annoying prior to Series 3 because it was so slow to do everything. So it would take a lot longer to get to it and then it wasn't quicker at all.
But what's, so what's
I don't
worse?
Mind it, but I do find it awkward.
What's worse is if you do voiceover accidentally. So we've got the Sony remote for the TV trained as one of the remotes for the Apple TV. So you can use the one remote for both devices. And the other day my daughter was doing something. She said, "Yeah, the Apple TV's not working properly." It's like, oh my gosh, she's pressed a button multiple times and turned voiceover on, but because I'm not using the Siri remote, so I don't know what button she's pressed because she's using this generic remote. So I had to suddenly try and work it out and finally got there. But it was just the most frustrating experience trying to switch off voiceover using VoiceOver, you know, using the normal navigation, because it's just like setting. It's like an X Factor. It's like settings. And you're like, oh my god, okay, it's that annoying guy's voice. You know, you click it. It's like network settings. Oh my god, five options. Oh my god. Oh my god, this is gonna kill me. Well, I finally worked it out and did the three button tap and got out of it. But yeah, I remember years ago. Do you remember when they introduced Zoom? I can't remember what OS.
Oh yeah.
And there were these sort of wonderful posts by people in forums going, I don't know what's happened to my iPhone. It's gone completely mental. And there was like a YouTube video of a guy, his entire phone zoomed in because he pressed the key combination or whatever it was, and suddenly everything switched to Zoom and he can't do anything because he's zoomed right into everything. It was the most cool thing.
When I was at school, one of the pranks we used to play regularly is if you got someone's phone, because obviously you didn't used to have PIN code. You remember, like, back in the day, you didn't have a PIN code for your phone. You just swipe to unlock it. Well, no, before you even had iPhones. I'm talking about like, Nokia phones.
You literally
just pressed menu star to get into it. And you'd take someone's phone when they weren't looking and then go into settings and then just change the language to, like, Algerian or something. Because then the phone would just be incorrect. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't know where to go. And it got to the point that so many people used to do this to everyone, that everyone knew, because there was always a number for each menu option. So if you were really experienced on the Nokia phones, you could just like press menu and then go 1, 5, 7, 2. And that would take you to the exact place you wanted to be, because it'd be like, okay, you wanted option 1 of the first screen, option 5 of the next screen, option 7 of the next screen. And we'd get to the point where we all knew the short codes for our phones as to what the one was to get into the language settings and turn it off, so that we didn't need to try and navigate through all of this like Arabic stuff, which made it really, really hard to determine where you were in the settings. But that was a great prank. Can't do those anymore.
No, the best pranks now you can do is the one I saw, which was the autocorrect one, where the kid changed his parents' phone so that no was yes, and then it was like texting them saying, you know, while you're away, can I have a party? And they're like, yes. It's like, awesome, you're great. Like, yes, I meant yes. It's like, what's happening? Every time I mean yes, good. I say yes. It was great. The other thing that was a funny bug, just to mention quickly, because I was looking through some tweets from people yesterday, old tweets unrelated to anything of me, but just other people, and there were loads of ones with that question mark box thing. You know, when I didn't get it, but this iOS 11 bug where with the weird, and it was just brilliant looking at all these tweets that people have written, where it's like question mark box didn't know about this sort of thing. It's like, what the hell? And I realized it was that bug, but I never got it. I don't know what it was. I think apparently it was, if you sent somebody something, like a message or something with that in, or there was an email, not an email, but there was something, it would trigger your autocorrect to learn it or something. It was almost like
something to do with the neural network.
Like
machine learning thing. Just for some reason learnt that was a thing that should be. And so it made everyone have it. Which is,
love all that stuff.
I mean, you look at stuff like machine learning, and that's what makes Face ID possible, which is incredible how it works. But then you get silly things like that. It's like, ugh. That's the price we pay for basically deciding that code isn't good enough, that you need code plus magic we don't understand, which is basically how I visualize a neural network. It's just, we've trained it. We don't know what it is. It's just magic.
It's probably going to kill us one day, but yeah. At the moment it recognises our faces, one day it'll filter us all out for extermination or something.
For now, it's giving me suggested emojis based on what I've used recently, so it's fine.
Exactly. I'll quickly mention the Pixel 2. So I did order a Pixel 2 XL for testing purposes, the usual story, and for the Daydream headset thing. But I cancelled the order. I wouldn't normally react to stuff like this when you see some of this stuff that comes up in the press or whatever. But I remember when I ordered it, I thought, you know, do I really need this? Do I really need this just for the Daydream thing? I've already got a Pixel I can use. So it's not the end of the world. It was, you know, like 900 odd quid as well. And I just figured there was all this stuff about screen shifting, screen burning, lots of issues with the quality of the pixels, and just the quality of the screen.
I love the fact that some of them arrived without an operating system.
Oh, I love that. I love that, yeah. Just imagine the support call when you're getting through to someone and they're trying to go through their normal FAQ. So, you know, have you tried resetting
it?
Have
you been to settings?
There is no operating system. So I cancelled that. So that was the end of that story. What about taxes? Do you want to talk about taxes?
Yeah, I could briefly talk taxes.
And then we could talk about Xbox One X quickly.
Yeah, I mean, taxes is a basic story is that people say that Apple haven't been paying their taxes properly in certain countries. They say they have, and that it's just a very complex system. And then people are outraged because all of these stories are hilarious because, like, if you read them, like a Telegraph or the Daily Mail or whatever, they'll have like two or three paragraphs of they've done this, they've done this, they've done this, they've not paid this amount of tax that other people are. And then there'll be at some point in every article, there always is, they haven't done anything illegal. Like, there is no nothing improper about this. This is not illegal. This is just what they've done. And that's the crucial bit, is that tax is massively complicated. And you can shift money around and do things to save your tax. And if you're the CEO of a big company or the CFO or, you know, anyone that cares about their money, you don't pay more taxes than you have to. You actively try and pay as little as possible. I know I certainly do. I don't want to give the government any of my fucking money. And really, people get angry at the wrong people about it. Like, most, I'm very much of the opinion that the government shouldn't really have any say in anything. It should be as small as possible. And tax law is one of those things where it's got so convoluted because they've added incentives and tried to push markets in certain ways. Yeah. I'd be much happier for like a free market system where it is, okay, you pay tax on your income and that is it. And that is a flat rate that's the same for everyone, that's a percentage, sorted. Because then the reason that these loopholes happen is because you get things like, oh, we're trying to stimulate growth in the film industry, for example. So exactly, there's a 0% tax rate on it. So then people set up fake companies pretending to be, you know, filming that are going to make a huge loss because they're not ever going to sell their stuff because they want it to make a loss because then they can claim all the tax back and it's 0%. And so you get all of these complicated schemes that aren't necessarily illegal. They're morally ambiguous. But you know, so what? So if you simplified everything, then there'd be less loopholes. But there's so many loopholes that, of course, people are going to try and not dodge tax, but cleverly pay as little as possible. And that seems to be what's happened here. Although most people don't seem to understand it because it's, you know, huge international taxation, which is massively hard to regulate, especially when everyone has their own tax rules and no one really knows how to tax something that's made in China, developed and designed in America, but then sold in the UK via an intermediary in Luxembourg and Ireland. It's like, well, who should pay tax? Like, the VAT is obviously going to go to the UK government, but is the tax on it? And should it? And it's a mess. Very complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the arguments that can come up sometimes, which just drive me crazy, is when people say, oh, there's one rule for one and one rule for the rich and one rule for us. And it's like, well, there isn't. There's one rule. There's one tax law, there's multiple elements to the tax law, but there's levels of tax that we pay, and anybody can go and do their own tax return and can claim back any equipment they've bought that, you know, their company didn't pay for, but they use it for their job and claim it back from their earnings so that they pay less tax. Anybody can put their money wherever they want to. It's yes, there's money involved in terms of hiring people, whatever, but in terms of it being one rule for one and one for another, I don't necessarily agree. I think there's we all follow, you know, the tax law and pay the taxes that we're supposed to pay. And when you get people in, you know, question time audiences saying, oh, you know, I end up paying more tax than the super rich. No, you don't. You pay proportionately the same because you're paying a percentage. But you can do some of these things that these people are doing to be, air quotes, tax efficient. You know, and if you hire an accountant or a CFO, that's what their job is, to make you tax efficient and to make your business efficient. So my accountant will tell me to make sure that the drawings we take, because we're both 50-50 partners in the business, owners of the business, the drawings we take are equal and are consistent so that I'm not paying more tax than I should be when there's sort of a buffer with what, you know, Hannah's able to take, exactly. You know what I mean? So making sure it's balancing out and making sure that we stay within the relevant thresholds so that we're not going into the next bracket. That I don't see as being immoral. That is definitely not illegal. That's being tax efficient. And I think 9 times out of 10, what also frustrates me is when you see some of these people complaining, you know, about the super rich are getting away with it and all this sort of stuff. It's like, well, this is no different from when you've had a builder round or a plumber round or a carpenter round or whatever you have done. And they go, you say, how much do I owe you? And they say, oh, it's 120 quid, but it's 100 if you give me cash. That cash is going straight in their pocket. It's not going to the tax man. They're doing it to get out of VAT. This is happening at the lowest levels and the highest levels. And it's the same thing for things like capital gains. You know, what frustrates me about the tax situation is the tax on tax. That's the biggest issue I have with taxing. I agree with paying tax. I agree with paying, you know, for all the services that we get. I think it's amazing that we get the NHS and all this stuff and that other countries don't. I don't think it's amazing that they don't, but you know what I mean. It's amazing that we do. But I want to pay, obviously, the correct amount of tax that I have to pay. And what frustrates me is when I pay tax at source, you know, so I've got my earnings, it's in my pocket, and I've paid my tax. Then I go and buy things and I'm taxed. Or I go and buy a house and then I sell the house and I have to pay capital gains tax on the difference. That, or I die and my kids have to pay inheritance tax. That stuff drives me crazy. And as much as it drives me crazy, I can imagine it driving other people crazy to the point where they do steps to make sure that when they leave their kids their inheritance, the kids are not going to get taxed on it. And to be honest, I agree with that. I mean, I would do that. I would be tax efficient like that. If my accountant said to me tomorrow, I can make you really tax efficient and I can do this and do that, I would do it. And I would guarantee you that 90% of people, if you ask them, would do the same. If you said to anyone that was earning $3,000 a month, let's say $2,000 a month, whatever, I can stick 500 quid more in your pocket by making you more tax efficient completely legally, then I think 9 times out of 10 people would say yes. Absolutely.
It's like,
because and also you can't, there's no moral tax though. Sorry, there's no moral tax. There's no, if you think that somebody should pay more tax and that person goes, fine, I'm going to write a check to the Inland Revenue for more than my taxes, they're going to give you a refund because they're going to go, well, you shouldn't be paying this because this is your tax, you know, this is your accounts and this is your return and that's what you should be paying. No, I want to pay more. Well, you can't pay more because that's what you should be paying. It's the most ludicrous argument. It drives me crazy. But yeah.
It's like when I'm doing accounts and things, and like I've got a form because my company year end's just coming up, and I've got a form from my accountant to fill out things like what do I pay in heating for my house, and the cleaner, and you know, electric, gas, all that kind of stuff, and then how many rooms have I got, and how many of this and that, and that. So they can look at it and go, okay, well he's allowed to claim back a certain amount because he's got a home office, and so he's allowed to, you know, claim back a certain amount. Or if you're a window cleaner, for example, and you wear a uniform while you're cleaning, like if you've got a polo shirt with your company name on it, you're allowed to claim back £100 a year for the expense of washing your own uniform. And people look at that and go, well, I work in an office, but I don't get paid £100 doing it. So, well, that's that's the stupidity of the tax system. Like,
yes,
that's just how it is.
Yeah.
It is strange. It's a very, but very ironically, strange, but complicated ironically, system.
But ironically, those people in those offices, which is what I did when I started working, when I found out I could do my own tax return back in the 90s, I think I started doing it after I first got my first jobs. And the reason I ended up doing my own tax return, or I either did it or got an accountant to do it and paid someone 100 quid or whatever, but it was worth it because what was happening was I was buying things like little Scion organizers or not necessarily laptops at the time, that was more in the sort of 2000s, but I was buying things that I was using for my job because my company was too cheap, the company I worked for was too cheap to do it. You know, they wouldn't buy me a 300 quid Scion organizer, but I bought my Scion organizer to organize my diary and to organize my contacts for work. So I was able to claim that back as a business expense against my tax return. Now I don't get the 300 quid back, but it comes off my earnings. And so that can reduce my tax bill, especially if it took me into a lower threshold. So there were things like magazine subscriptions that were relevant to the industry. It was all about space planning stuff. I was buying some software that was CAD related. This was all stuff that I wouldn't have had to have bought or done. You know, yes, you could argue I might have bought a Scion organizer, but it's not the point. I was using it for business. And so there's still, for all of these people that sit there and complain, yes, okay, they can't go and buy a private jet and get out of it or whatever, but they can do their own tax return and claim for things back. Maybe they've bought a laptop. You know, you see loads of people who, especially in our industry, where you go and work on client site or something, or you get a job where people might have their own laptop that they bring in. You know, it's the old sort of bring your own machine type attitude. Or they're using phones or whatever, and they're doing business on those phones. That there's elements of that that you can claim back. So those very people that can complain about not being able to get their uniform washed, well, they could still be claiming for their phone or their laptop or their iPad, especially if they're using those things for work. So there's always,
and that's why it's so stupid. Like there are so many little things like that you can claim back, and it's like, well, why? It's just
and if you hire an accountant, exactly. And if you hire an accountant or you hire a financial planner or anybody like this, their job is to maximize your income, is to maximize the money you can make, your investments, your savings, your pension, all of those things. And so they would give you the relevant advice to do that. And if they didn't and said, well, actually, you're earning, you know, percentagely, you're earning a higher amount than most people in the country. So on that basis, I think I'm going to, you know, do stuff that makes you pay more tax. You'd be like, no, I don't want to hire you because that's not what your job should be. And it is And I'm not, you know, it's a difficult subject because it's like with Apple and Amazon and all these people that do all this stuff where they move money around. Yes, there's a moral ambiguity to it in that, yes, okay, with Lewis Hamilton with his jet, you know, you're going through several companies buying it and leasing back and all that stuff. There's a sort of level where it starts getting so convoluted it's almost getting ridiculous. And I think there was a thing about a few years ago, there was a big controversy with the BBC people, BBC presenters that had been in some dodgy scheme of running car parks or something weird. It was some weird, it was such a weird business model that was making a loss so they could offset it. And that sort of stuff starts getting really ridiculous and really stupid. But, you know, if I remember a conversation with the account, we had an accountant when we had the business and we first had our business and we were in London. We were paying rent, a ridiculous amount of rent for this office in Southwark. And at one point, my accountant said, we probably weren't in a position at the time, but he said, you should look at basically buying a property. You should look at buying a commercial property, buy an office, two-floor office, a two-floor building. You then put that in the name of sort of a pension scheme within the company. You know, we create a company pension scheme or something. The pension scheme owns the property, and then you rent the property back from the pension scheme. And that's how a lot of businesses do this sort of stuff. I remember... Yeah. Working for a company, we did a project for a company that did printing, photographic printing. You know, so they were the people that you would send your little, I can't remember what they're called, the films from old cameras. You know, what the hell were they called? Those things that you'd send off. The APS films, whatever they were. Yeah, the film rolls, your 35mm or whatever. You'd send them off and then you'd get your photos back with a load of stickers over some of them saying dodgy or, you know, we've reported you to the police or, you know, too blurry or whatever. And they had these huge printers, you know, these £250,000, £200,000 Fuji printers that would process these pictures and squirt them all out. And on every single picture, I remember when we walked around the warehouse, was property of this company was called Standard Photographic, and it was property of the Standard Photographic Pension Fund. So the pension fund had bought these things for cash from the pension pot and then were renting them back to the company. So the company could then claim that as an expense. And the pension fund could have that. It was all perfectly legal because that's how it was done. And this is tax law. This is the way it is.
Tax law is so stupid. It drives me mad when people like the Labour Party had in their manifesto, we want the wealthy, we feel that they should pay a little bit more to contribute towards the upkeep of the country, whatever. And it's like, they do. If you pay 40% tax and you own £2 million, then you're paying more than someone who earns 40% tax who's on a salary of £100,000. Like, it's a percentage. Exactly. I've never understood why we have tiered taxation. Like, why isn't it just a flat rate of a percentage for everyone? Yeah. Because then it's the same. Yeah. Very odd.
The tiered thing is the most confusing thing because it will be like, you know, oh my God, I'm going to earn this much money. I'm going to be paying 40%. It's actually, well, no, you're not. You're going to be paying, you're going to get the first 12 or whatever it is free. Then you're going to pay this rate for the next block up to about, what is it, 25 or 28 or something, or 30 or something now.
Yeah, it used to confuse me when I was younger because I remember that I had my first job and then the next job that I was applying for was going to put me up a tax band.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself that I was going to be actually paid less because.
Yes.
I was going to ask them at my interview, can you actually pay me £1,000 less? I'm underneath the threshold, because otherwise I'm going to be paying £1,200 in tax. I'm glad I didn't. I worked it out in the end. I was like, oh, okay. I see how it works. But it is stupid. Yeah. It's like, why isn't it just that flat 40%, percentage?
Yeah, because that 40% could be like the final £2,000. So you'll be paying 40% of the £2,000 that's over the other thresholds. But you're it's a crazy system. But like you say, if everyone had I obviously know why they do it. They want to do it so the people that are on the really low income will get a tax break, and great, but that's just the way it works. You can't, you know, I think what would happen is if the government or whoever suddenly said, okay, we're going to scrap tax system as it is at the moment, we're going to come up with one figure that everyone pays, one percentage, everyone will pay it from your first pound to your £100 million. Everyone will pay this figure. There would be people in that lower range that would be complaining that that's not fair. Why are we having to pay? Why I earn £12,000 a year. Why have I got to pay tax? You know, what? It's too low. I can't afford. It's just like, you can't win. It's just one of those stupid situations that you just can't win. I brush some of this stuff off when I see the headlines because it's a clickbait. It's about, you know, Lewis Hamilton or whatever dodged paying $10 million in fees or VAT or whatever it was. And then you actually look into the meat of it. Yeah, but you look into the meat of it. You look into actually what's going on. And, okay, what he's done was jumping over several things and through several companies. But if you look at exactly what he's done, it's exactly the sort of thing that you could imagine. I could imagine my accountant saying, and it's what any accountant would say, this is the best way of doing this. This is, I want to buy a jet. what's the best way of doing it? It's like if I wanted to buy a motorhome or something and put it through the business, whether I could or not, that's what you ask your accountant, and your accountant's going to go, you either can or can't, and if you can, this is how you do it, and these are the implications of what you're doing. And yeah. I think at one point we were going to buy a car, and we were thinking like we could buy it through the business and do it as a fleet car or whatever. And he said, no, not a good idea. Yes, you'll save the VAT on the car, but then you'll be taxed on the car, and there's all other implications about ownership and everything else. And it was like, okay, great, we'll do it. You know, we'll go the way that you recommend, because that's going to be more efficient. And it's just like with, I know you did PAYE for a while so that you could do mortgage stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. If you start a company, your accountant, limited company, your accountant is going to go, right, here's the options that you've got. You know, you can do PAYE, and here are the implications. You're going to have to pay national insurance. You're going to have to pay employer national insurance. You're going to, you know, it's going to come off your corporate tax bill. Your corporate tax is going to be lower, but you're going to be paying more tax. Or you can go down the dividend route. And that's just not completely normal and legal. And it's the way that this stuff works, because that's the law. So
I chose to pay like 20 grand to the Inland Revenue, just because that was the way to make me look better for a mortgage application. But yeah. I would really have preferred not to have.
Exactly. And the thing with the tax thing is someone could say to me, well, you know, so you're getting away with paying tax because you're doing it on the dividend thing, which means you're paying less tax. It's like, yes, but if I get paid through dividends, I might pay less PAYE, but I'm paying way more corporate tax because my dividends are classed as profit and you're taxed on profit. So therefore, In essence, I am still paying probably the same amount of tax overall. It's just my personal tax is lower, but my corporate tax is higher. If I did PAYE, my corporate tax would be way lower because our salaries would all come out on us as an expense, but our personal tax would be higher. So it's just a balancing game. That's all it is. I am still paying the necessary amount of tax I should be paying. I'm paying tax that I'm happy paying. I'm not happy paying, but you know what I mean. I am comfortable with the level. I do hate February, but I'm comfortable paying it in terms of the amount that I have to pay. That doesn't bother me. What frustrates me more than anything is the tax on tax. It's like our place. We got a place in London, which we're renting out. We just had it done up to be able to rent out again. We were talking about maybe selling it. We're not sure, but we're probably going to keep it. But if we sold it, we've got to pay a tax. It's not going to be a huge amount, but we'll pay tax on the profit, even though we bought the place with money that we paid tax on. That's the stuff that drives me mad.
That's a difficult area. But yeah, if not doing anything illegal, then it's fine, in my opinion.
Exactly, but it makes
sense to change tax law. It makes much more sense to close some of these things rather than complaining to the companies that use them, because why the fuck wouldn't you?
Exactly, crazy. It needs to be less taxing.
Oh, end there on a lovely pun. That was sterling work.